Okay, good evening and welcome to this week's installment of the Parsha Practice and Pshat series for this week's Seder Parshas Devarim. For this week, because it's Parshas Devarim and it's the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, we always lay in Parshas Devarim and the Shabbos immediately prior to Tisha B'Av. Both the practice and the Pshat presentation will focus on the same idea. Namely, the fact that, again, Shabbos Chazon, the Shabbos will read Parshas Devarim, is always read before Tisha B'Av, and there is a connection between what appears in the Sedra and the Tisha B'Av, because the Sedra begins with Moshe Rabbeinu's, or it introduces Moshe Rabbeinu's final speech to Klal Yisrael. It was a long speech, a series of speeches that began, according to Chazal, Eila HaDvarim, Eila in Gematria is 36, Aleph Lamed Hey, 36 days before his death, a little more than a month before his death, Moshe Rabbeinu gave a final series of speeches to Klal Yisrael, and that's what Chol Mishneh Devarim, Eila HaDevarim is. So it includes a recap of some of the historical events that took place over the preceding 40 years. So if you look in the opening parak, in parak Aleph, one of the events that he recalls is the events of the Meraglim, the spies who came and delivered a negative report about Eretz Yisrael, 10 of the 12, and that led Bnei Yisrael to rebel and led HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately to decide that he wasn't going to let that generation enter into Eretz Yisrael, as we know. So it says in the Perek Aleph, it says, but Perek Aleph, once upon a time, about Teirognu V'Aleichem, you, the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling what happened. You grumbled and complained in your tents, and you said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates us, that's why he took us out of the land. And how can we possibly go into a land that our representatives, our spies, have told us is such a difficult land, and they are a big people there in fortresses and whatever else. So they rebelled, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished them by saying, well, you're not going to go into the land. You're going to wander around here for 40 years, as we know. If you look back in Parsha Shlach, where the event is originally presented, so it says over there that the people, Taka, cried and complained, exactly as Moshe Rabbeinu says here. And it says over there, Vayivku Ha'am, this is in Perek Yadala B'Midbar, in Parsha Shlach, in Pasuk Aleph, it says, Vayivku Ha'am B'Lailahu, the people cried that night. So it doesn't say what night it was, just said they cried that night. So the Gemara in Tainus on Daf Chavtes has a whole explanation based on psukim and other dates that we do have in the Torah, based upon, again, what the Torah does tell us, and able to piece together. It turns out that the Meraglim, where Rashi learns, came back on the eve of Tisha B'Av, the 8th of Av, and delivered their report, and that night was the night of Tisha B'Av. And so there was a deep connection from that perspective between the event of the Meraglim and the event of Tisha B'Av, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, you know something? You cried tonight for no reason. It was silly. It was pointless. So now I'm going to make this night a night of crying for all time. I like to give the example. Sometimes you say to your children or your grandchildren, don't stop crying. In a minute, I'm going to give you something to cry about, right? We've all said that, right? So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, said to Klal Yisrael as well. And that was, of course, the night of Tisha B'Av. So in the Pshat section, I'll try to elaborate on that idea a little more. But in terms of the practice, so we know that we don't only fast on Tisha B'Av. We do fast, of course, on Tisha B'Av. The Mishnah lists a number of things that happen on Tisha B'Av, including, of course, this event of the Meraglim and its aftermath, but and the decision that Jews wouldn't go into the land that generation. But we have practices that we already pick up well before Tisha B'Av. We're right now, yesterday was Rosh Chodesh Av, so right now we're in the middle of the 9 days. And we have a practice, for example, during the 9 days, not to eat meat and drink wine. Where does that come from? Except for on Shabbos. But we avoid eating meat and drinking wine during the week of the 9 days, the whole week of the 9 days. But it's the Sfardim, it's not necessarily the whole 9 days, but from Motzei Shabbos, Shavu Shechalbo Tisha B'Av, the week that Tisha B'Av lands. But again, we have that practice. Question, where does that practice come from? Where does it say anywhere? Where do we find any place that we're told that we're supposed to not eat meat or drink wine? And where did such a practice come from? It does not mention that in the Mishnah, the Gemara. For example, there's no Mishnah Gemara that says that the 9 days we can't eat flesh eggs or drink wine. What the Mishnah does tell us, what Chazal do tell us, the Gemara does tell us, is that on Erev Tisha B'Av, okay, Erev Tisha B'Av, that'll be next Wednesday, the 8th of Av, on Erev Tisha B'Av, you don't eat meat or drink wine. You don't drink wine at what we call the Suda Mafsekes. The last meal that you eat before Tisha B'Av should be a mournful meal, so we don't drink wine and so on at that meal. That we do fine, but how does that come all the way back to the whole 9 days? I mean, they look in the Mishnah Gemara that talks about the Erev Tisha B'Av, okay? But the practice is recorded. I mean, it's not found in the Gemara, but the Rambam brings such a practice as a minute. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it. So where exactly, what's the mukkah, so to speak, for this, again, widespread practice that we don't eat flesh and we don't drink wine during the 9 days? And the Shulchan Aruch even says that they would put the shechita knives away. The shochtim had the week off, the week of the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, because they wouldn't even shecht any meat. There was no meat, no wine during the 9 days. So where exactly does it come from? So there is, even though the Gemara there talks about not eating meat, not drinking wine, and so on, on Surah Mafsekes, on Erev Tisha B'Av, the 8th of Av, and that's it. But there is a different Gemara in Yevamos, around Daf Mem Gimel, where the Gemara says that there are other activities that we avoid in the whole week, from the beginning of Av, because we do have a statement, Mishen Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. When the month of Av arrives, Mishen Nichnas Av, doesn't mean Tisha B'Av, Mishen Nichnas Av, when Av enters, meaning Rosh Chodesh Av, the beginning of the month of Av, Mishen Nichnas Av, Mematin Mesimcha, we minimize, we downplay anything which we avoid, anything which generates Simcha. So that we do have, that Chazal do say, it doesn't say anything about meat and wine, but it says Mishen Nichnas Av, Mematin Mesimcha, so the Gemara somewhere else does mention certain things you avoid, planting or a house refurbishing, and so on, which is necessary or is done, being done for the purpose of simcha, binyan shel simcha, netiyah shel simcha, planting a garden and so on. If you have to, the leak in the roof, or there's some other work that has to be done for the house, that's something else. But to build, let's say, something for, because you're making a chasana a week or two after Tisha B'Av, so you're going to build the chuppah, you're going to get all the flowers now, and things like that, that we avoid during the 9 days. So that it does say in the Gemara. It does not say, as I said, eating meat and drinking wine. But it does say, and that does say these other things which bring a person simcha to be avoided. Even business activities, which are not done for pure parnasa, but to plan a vacation or things that are done out of simcha, so that we try and avoid during the 9 days, because Mishen Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. So one could suggest, and it's interesting, we look in the Rambam, when he brings the minig of not eating meat and drinking wine during the 9 days, he brings it by introducing it with the statement of Chazal Mishen Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. So one could suggest that the idea behind avoiding meat and wine during the 9 days is that it's wheat and wine are very often associated with simcha. Matter of fact, we know that on Yontif, when there's a mitzvah of simcha, so the Chazal tell us, "Ein simcha l'b'yayin," a person should drink wine on Yontif. As far as eating meat, so it could be that the requirement to eat meat on Yontif is to eat the meat from the karbonis, the shlomim, the special Yontif offerings that people brought. That's a whole question whether the requirement to eat meat today on Yontif, which we haven't practiced eat meat today on Yontif. The question is that a Doraisa? According to Tosa, it would seem it's not a Doraisa, because only Doraisa when you're eating the meat from the Karbonis, which we don't have today. But others disagree. Others say, no, it doesn't have to be only the meat from the Karbonis, any meat that a person enjoys. So we do have a concept of meat and wine being associated with Simcha. So once we apply Mishen Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha, this statement of Chazal, to talking about, planting and building and doing other things that generate simcha that are not absolutely necessary and so on. So it's not much of a jump to say, okay, other things like meat and wine, which are associated with simcha, we should also avoid during the 9 days. That's a possible, possible source for the practice. Even though many have pointed out, or Salvation pointed out, and others, and wait a second, an ovel, Rachmana Litzlan, an ovel sitting shiva is allowed to eat meat. There's no restriction on ovel to eat meat and drink wine. Okay, an onain means the person, the relative, from the time of the death of the immediate relative until the burial. So in the status, it's called aninus. The person is an onain. So that's, again, from the time that you hear about the death of one of these seven immediate relatives, father, mother, sister, brother, son, daughter, spouse. So that's the time that you get the news of the death until the burial, it's called an onain. So an onain doesn't partake of these things. But an ovel, during the week of Shiva, there's no requirement that an ovel is not allowed to eat meat. An ovel is allowed to eat meat. So what's going on? Ovel is allowed to drink wine. So it's not exactly a practice of avelus, per se. We don't find it associated with regular avelus. So there are different answers that our Salvation answered, that the wine is something which comforts a mourner. And there are other things that we can say to explain that practice. But in any event, one can say that Mishen Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha includes things that are typically associated with Simcha, and includes meat and wine. So that's certainly a possibility. Other Rishonim quote, there's a pasuk in Daniel, of all places, where Daniel lived in the time between the first and the second Beis HaMikdash, and Daniel speaks about that he mourned for 3 weeks. Doesn't exactly say when they were and what exactly the nature of the mourning was, but he says he didn't eat meat and drink wine. So some suggest, oh, what 3 weeks were those? Well, we call the 3 weeks from Shavuot to Tammuz till Tishah. In fact, some Rishonim say the minig of not eating meat goes not only Mishnechus Av, Rosh Chodesh Av, but all the way back to the 3 weeks of Shavuot to Tammuz. We don't follow that practice, at least not that I know of in too many places, but maybe that's what Daniel is referring to. Others say it's not correct, that Daniel was talking about something else and it wasn't even during his time of year, but that's another possible source for this practice. The most widely, or one of the more widely created, cited sources is Yerushalmi, which says that it was a minig established by women, Nashim, women, at the time, from the time of Rosh Chodesh Av and on, the lo mishti, they would not, difficult to understand that word, but mishti maybe means drink. Okay, they wouldn't drink. It doesn't say what. They wouldn't drink water, they wouldn't drink soda. It probably means the lo mishti chamer. That's how some Rishonim learn it. Chamer is chamar medina. Chamer is the Aramaic word for wine. Okay, so they wouldn't drink wine. Why? Well, it had to do with taka with the Chorban Habayis. The Beis HaMikdash was built on what we call the Evan Shesia. Evan Shesia, some people may remember Hoshana, it's the second day of Hoshana. So Hoshana of Evan Shesia. Evan Shesia is a stone from which the entire world, so to speak, sprouted. You know, it's Nishtas Kol Olam Kula, the whole world was a stone, and that stone was the place where the Beis HaMikdash was built. Well, that's the same rock, you know, that the Muslims have to call the Dome of the Rock. You know, it's probably that's referring maybe to the same rock, you know, whether we can see it and down below, wherever it is. But Evan Shesia, and that's associated also with wine because on Sukkot, when they did the Nisach HaMayim, they poured the wine, they poured the water. So it went into Shisin, and it's also the same word, Shesia. So there's some who say that that's the minig not to drink wine because we lost the Beis HaMikdash was built on the Evan Shesia. So I see you have Lee Weinberg has a beautiful backdrop over here, looking at the old city, okay, and so there's the Dome of the Rock, and the Mokom HaMikdash, so that we're more than that, we had the absence of that, so the women didn't drink wine, okay.
Have the dome removed if you want.
Okay, right, today with photographs, right, I've seen they put the Beis HaMikdash instead, yeah. Right. Anyway, be that as it may, The problem with that source is, and again, you know, to go back again, the first source is that Mishnechus Av and Matan B'Simcha, that has to do with the time of Simcha. But again, the Gemara gives other examples, doesn't give meat and wine. We can extend it, but the Gemara talks about planting. The Daniel source, well, some say that it's not a valid source because it wasn't this time of year. This source also has a problem because there are different girsas. Okay, some say Mishti does not mean drinking, not from Lashon Shesia, drinking, but from Lashon Shesi Ve'erev, Shesi, the whoop and the wharf, sewing. When you sew the whoop and the wharf for a garment. Okay, and it doesn't say Chamra, it's Amra with an ayin, which means wool. Okay, the minig that women developed was not to sew clothing, was not to repair clothing during this time of year. To sew new clothing had nothing to do with drinking wine. Okay, Rishonim quoted the other way. But what the original Rishonim is subject to different gisos, and some say it had nothing to do with this topic of drinking wine at all. It had to do with Mishnah. Women took a practice not to, people this time of year wore tattered clothes. They didn't fix their clothes. We don't send our clothes. We don't freshly press our clothes. We don't wear freshly laundered clothes and so on. So that's had to do with that. So it's possible to suggest that maybe the actual mukkah, maybe for this minig, is a very interesting gemara that appears in the very last daf of Masechas, of Perek Cheskas Habatim in Baba Basra, daf Samach HaMabes, where the gemara says that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, people were so shattered, people were so distraught, they said, you know something, we're never going to eat meat again. We can't eat meat. How can we ever eat meat again? It reminds us of the carbonos. We used to eat meat from carbonos. Now I can have a steak, it's too depressing. And how can we ever drink wine? Wine reminds us of the Nisach HaYayin and so on. They're too depressing. So then the Chachamim said, 1 second, so if that's the case, we shouldn't eat fruit either. Okay, because after all, Bikurim, the people brought Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. They said, okay, we can't even, well, we shouldn't eat bread, because we had the Lechem Aponim, and we had the Lach Meitoda, and so on and so forth. And we shouldn't drink water, because on Sukkot and Nisachamah, there comes a point where, you know, it becomes something which the Tzibur can't tolerate. It's too much. We mourn the Beis Hamikdash, yes, we're depressed, no Beis Hamikdash, but it has to be within bounds of reason. It has to be something that people can, they can't say, we can never do anything ever again because of, so therefore this practice that the pious people of that time tried to initiate of not eating meat and drinking wine all year long, this was rejected because it was too much to expect people to be able to do that. And then it was, you know, reductive ad absurdum to add more things and more things. It would be impossible to live. How could we ever live? So some suggest that when the Gaon looks like says this, and it's really hinted at in the Rush. Yeah, it was rejected. Their proposal not to eat meat and drink wine was rejected. But you know something? Because people can't live like that. You can't live a whole, you're never going to eat meat and drink wine again. So therefore, that minig did not catch on. But for 9 days out of the year, that we can handle. That we can handle. They were right. Really, they were right. But it's too much. We can't expect people never to eat meat, never to drink wine ever again. So that minig was rejected, right? And Chazal never imposed. It was a minig that the Tzibur couldn't tolerate. But for 9 days out of the year, we can tolerate it. So this week, you know, and I personally am allergic to fish. So I have a tougher time than some during the 9 days. But okay, not exactly wasting away. There's other things that we can eat. And so Shabbos will have meat and wine, because nothing, no morning on Shabbos. But for Kedaihu Beis Elokeinu, that for a few days out of the year, you know what? We can take note of the absence of the Beis Hamikdash. So maybe that's where the practice comes from. The Bir HaGrah, in the Shulchan Aruch, when they record this practice, he tells you to look in this Gemara in Bava Basra, Samach HaBeis. That's what he thinks the source is. And the Rush in Tainus, when talking about this practice, not even meat and drink wine, he also refers to this Gemara. So these are a few of the different possible sources for the minig that's widespread in Klai Yisrael, not to eat meat and drink wine, even though the Gemara never says it. But it does show that either it's because it's a form of simcha, or it's you know, it's kind of like, as I said, an extension of this other thing that Gemara mentions of not the building and not planting and doing other things that generate simcha. So this is also a form of simcha, or it has something to do with this 3 week abstention from meat and wine by Daniel, which is a little difficult. Or it's because Gemara in Yerushalmi that the women initiated such a practice, but we had a problem with that. Maybe it's depending on the girsa, or maybe it's this idea from the Gemara in Bava Basra that the Jews in general, the pious Jews in general, wanted to get away, do away. They missed the Beis Hamikdash so much, so we don't miss the Beis Hamikdash that much. So we don't apply that requirement all year. But 9 days out of the year, we can live without meat and wine. So that's the practice that we avoid out of inflation, avoid having wine and grape juice and so on for this week, and gives an opportunity to focus a little more on the Beis Hamikdash. That's in terms of practice. In terms of pshat, so we'll continue. We'll look at the same thing. What exactly is there any real connection? We said before that the Torah records here in Parshas Devarim. And Parshas Devarim, as I said before, is always read on the Shabbos for Tishrei. In fact, it's the only, to my knowledge, thinking through, it's the only Sedra that's actually always read prior to a particular holy holiday or a fast day on our calendar. It's always read. In other words, let's say Pesach is, we read Parshas Tzav on Shabbos before Pesach, but not if it's a leap year. A leap year, we do a different parsha before Pesach. And a Shavuos, we most of the time read B'midbar before Shavuos, but every once in a while, a calendar quirk, we read, and it's also even more common, we read Naso before Shavuos. And, you know, before Rosh Hashanah, we always read Parshas Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah, but sometimes it's not Nitzavim, it's Nitzavim Vayela, doubled up. And between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, depends if it's a Shabbos or not. Sometimes Shabbos Shuvah is Vayelech, sometimes Shabbos Shuvah is Azino. The only holiday that I could think of that we always read the same Sedra right before is Tisha B'Av. Hanukkah is almost always Parshas Miketz, but even then there's an exception. But Parshas Dvarim is always read according to our calendar on the Shabbos immediately prior to Shavuos, the Shabbos we call Shabbos Chazon based on Haftarah. And so the connection, as we mentioned earlier, a few connections. First of all, the word Eicha appears in Parshas Dvarim towards the beginning of Sedra. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu says Eicha Salavadi. So that's also a connection. The Medrash links that Eicha with the Eicha of the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon, which is further linked, of course, to Megillah Seicha. So that's a connection. But in terms of the Meraglim, the Torah says in Parshas Devarim, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chav Zayin, about Teirognu Ba'aleichem, right? The people complained that the Meraglim came back. Moshe is summarizing here the events that took place 40 years earlier. And it says over there that, guess what? The people grumbled and mumbled and complained and talked Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael and so on. And they said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates us. That's why he took us out of Mitzrayim. You know, and we're going to all be wiped out and we don't want to go. Our hearts are melted. And so they rebelled and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, as we said, and as we know, by saying, okay, this generation's not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. They're going to wander around for 40 years, etc. We all know the result. But in Parsha Shlach, when the event is first recorded, it says, the people, when did this happen? This whole episode, the Meraglim came back, said the Gemara, Tainus Choftes, as a whole, we said before, as a whole calculation to figure out, based on Pesukim earlier in the Torah, when the Meraglim went, and we know that they were there for 40 days, so they figure out when the Meraglim went, when the Meraglim came back. A little bit of Machlokas, Rashi and Tosa, they come back on Tisha B'Av, they came back Erev Tisha B'Av, the people cried Tisha B'Av night. Again, it depends how you calculate certain things. But in any event, so that's usually what we say, somewhere, and the Mishnah in Maseches Tainus mentions that several things happened on Tisha B'Av, one of which was the Gzeira that the Jews wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael, and the second one was the Chorban Bayis Rishon, the third was the Chorban Bayis Sheni, etc. So there is a connection. But perhaps, you know, we can suggest, at least al derech ha-Jewish, but I think it may even be to some extent pshat, that there's something else. It's not just that, you know, it happened to be the same date. Okay, it did happen to be the same date. It was a Tisha B'Av. Okay, it was Tisha B'Av. But there's something else also. And really, the Ramban a little bit in his parish in the Chumash here in Parshas Devarim, not here in Parshas Devarim, but in Parshas Shlach, where he quotes the pasuk here in Devarim, hints that a little bit. Because after all, the Chazal say, like I said before, when they cried that night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, oh, you cried tonight for nothing? I'm going to give you something to cry about for all generations. The Ramban and others wonder, where does the Chazal get that from? That's not in the Psukim. The Psukim certainly don't seem to link the events of the Meraglim with some future destruction. But Ramban points out that Psukim and Tillim, Perkuf of the Du. The Psukim and Tillim say that as a result of the complaining in the Midbar, so it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu swore that this generation would die out in the Midbar, and Pasuk Chav Zayin of Perkuf of and Tillim, Lahapil Zaram Bagoyim Lazarosam Baratzos. Their descendants would eventually be scattered among the nations. So the concept of Golas was already introduced, according to the Pasuk Tillim, at the time of the story of the Meraglim. So it's more, okay? It's not just that it happened to be the same night, but one led to the other. And it goes even deeper, I think, in the looking at the perspective of Jewish history over the last 2,000 or so years. You know, there are two great matanos, two great gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to the Jewish people, the Torah and Eretz Yisrael. In fact, both Eretz Yisrael and the Torah are referred to by Psukim as Morasha. Morasha, the more famous pasuk is about the Torah. In Parshas Sabrach, the Torah Tzivul on Moshe, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. Right? Morasha means the heritage. Morasha Kehilas Moshe, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. That's about the Torah. Eretz Yisrael is also called the Morasha. In the beginning of Parshas Vo'era, in Shmos, when Moshe is telling the people they're going to be taken out of Mitzrayim, it says, V'nosati osa lachem Morasha ani Hashem. The only two times that word appears in the Torah is Morasha. Morasha is, what's the difference between a Morasha and a Yerusha? Yerusha is an inheritance. What's the difference? So some explain that a Yerusha is an inheritance. I inherit something. My rich uncle dies, whatever, leaves me money. So what do I have to do with that money? The answer is whatever I want, right? He leaves me money, so now it's a Yerusha. So I can do whatever I want with that money. I can spend it all. I can put it away in a bank. I can buy a house with it. I can gamble it all. Well, I can donate to an animal hospital. I can do anything I want. It's my money. That's a Yerusha. A Morasha is more like something you inherit, but it's understood that you have to transmit it. It's like an heirloom, like an heirloom. You have it, and you can enjoy it and use it while you have it, but you have to preserve it. That's the understanding of a Morasha. Not a Yerusha, I can do whatever I want with the money. Sometimes they'll leave you a watch or whatever it is, or candlesticks. The understanding is you're going to transmit it to the next generation. You're not going to get rid of it. So that's Morasha. So Eretz Yisrael called Morasha, and the Torah is called Morasha. But it's very fascinating. Notice the difference. What was the reaction of the Jewish people? When they were given the Torah, the reaction was Nasa v'nishma. Yes, we're eager to receive it. And you all know the Medrash, right? All the other nations were offered the Torah, but they said, no, we're not interested. You know, what does it say in the Torah? Can't steal? Oh, that's not for us. Can't murder? Oh, that's not for us. Can't do this? That's not for us, right? And the Jewish people said, oh, we'll do it. We'll take it. Nasa v'nishma, right? Nasa v'nishma. It was an excitement. Now, later on, they're not long after, they made a mistake with the Egel and so on. But in terms of their excitement about receiving the Torah, the initial response was, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Na'aseh V'Nishma. It's interesting, just as a side point, the Medrash, it says, why is Har Sinai called Har Sinai? His real name we find early in the Chumash, Har Chorev. Har Chorev is how it's first called. Where does Sinai come from? So the Medrash says, even though it's not spelled the same way in Hebrew, but it's a play on words, it has to do with the word Sina. Sometimes a sin and a samech are interchanged because they have the same pronunciation. Like in Kel Adon, the samech stands. The Kel Adon is alphabetical, right? Kel Aleph, Kel Adon Al Kamasim Beis Baruch Hu Baruch. Right? You come to the samech, it says Semechem Betzaysam V'Sosim Bo. Semechem is sin. So the sin and the samech are sometimes interchangeable. So anyway, so it has to do with the word sinner. That sinner came from Har Sinai. How did sinner come from Har Sinai? Means sinner, hatred of the Jews. Because imagine, right, I give this example to students in high school and college, you know, especially high school. You know, sometimes imagine a teacher gives an assignment and it's okay, for homework you have to read the following 27 pages. And it goes, 27 pages, impossible, no time, blah, 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 blah. And there's always that one kid in the class says, no problem. Now, what do you want to do to that kid? You want to punch his face in? Like, what? Oh, be quiet, you know, you get annoyed at that kid. So that's what Klal Yisrael. The other nation said, no, we can't have the Torah. This is too hard. That's too hard. This mitzvah is too hard. And the Bnei Yisrael said, we'll do it. No problem. You know, of course. Of course they hate us, right? But anyway, that's just a side point. But Lemaisa, the Bnei Yisrael, were excited about receiving the Torah. They said, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Right, we're going to do it. We're going to take it. We accept. And yet Eretz Yisrael, what was their reaction to Eretz Yisrael? The Meraglim, no, we can't go. As the Pasuk says in our Sedra, in Parak Aleph, Pasuk Chavov, V'lo avisem lalos, he didn't want to go. We didn't accept Eretz Yisrael. We hesitated. We want to send spies. What's going to be? We're nervous about this. We're nervous about that. We're nervous about the other thing. Something was missing. And so the truth of the matter is, not just the Meraglim and not just Golas, but the truth of the matter is, most of Jewish history, we've been without Eretz Yisrael. Think about it, just in a perspective of total number of years. Taka, Jewish people did not, we always had the Torah. We accepted the Torah willingly, and we always had the Torah, that took the Torah with us wherever we went and so on. Eretz Yisrael, we may have longed for Eretz Yisrael and been mispal about Eretz Yisrael, but it was missing. We didn't accept it at first, lo avisem lalos, and therefore the Eretz Yisrael was kind of taken away from us. Most of Jewish history, we lived in Golas. Baruch Hashem, in the last 100 years or so, and, you know, certainly 72 years since the establishment of the state and so on. So we've come back to Eretz Yisrael, and maybe, you know, but most of Eretz Yisrael, hundreds and hundreds of years, centuries and centuries, we weren't in Eretz Yisrael. And that might be because of the fact that we initially didn't accept it. And that's the issue. That's what the Pasuk means. Well, obviously, you didn't want it. You didn't want it. You're not going to get to keep it. And so therefore, it's not just happens to be that the Chet HaMeraglim and the punishment of Sosan Meraglim happen to be the same date as Tisha B'Av. Okay, that's Chazal, same date, okay. But it's more than the same date. The failure of the Jewish people to accept Eretz Yisrael lovingly and willingly to take this present that they took with the way they took Torah, Matzah, Na'aseh V'Nishma, led to the decision that, you know what? There's going to come a Tisha B'Av, you'll be driven out of the land, you'll come back, you'll be driven out again, right? Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. The events are connected. They're not just happened to be because they were the same calendar date, but the events are connected. The events of Chorban Bayis Rishon, Chorban Bayis Sheni, which we still mourn, Chorban Bayis Sheni, to this day, we're still not there, we're still not back. Yes, we have Eretz Yisrael better, but we still don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So that was, in a certain sense, as a result of what happened at the time of the Meraglim, the Pasuk here in our Sedra, that's the Pshat. Perak Aleph Pasuk Chavov, V'lo Avisem Lalos. You had no desire, you had no interest in going to the land. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch said, you know what? This present is not going to be permanent. And most of Jewish history up until this point, we've been without Eretz Yisrael. So this is a time of year. And perhaps now that our generation, you know, has seen, Baruch Hashem, the return to Eretz Yisrael and the return of Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe that's a beginning, a turning around of that, the turning around of that Chet HaMeraglim. We mourn on Tisha B'Av because it's incomplete, but maybe it gives us the opportunity to focus a little more on the importance of Eretz Yisrael and to undo this mistake that the Pasuk identifies here in our Sedra, the Lo Avisem Lalos. We should want to go to the extent that we can and certainly support those who do go and renew our commitment to Eretz Yisrael and to accept it lovingly and willingly to make up for that mistake by the Meraglim.